Accession number 7480, roll number 5.
Mr. Jeffrey, rear 5.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Jeffrey, you were talking about the air cover not given by the...
No. And, well, I must say that they must have known what was there through the radio there, what was going off at the at Singapore. Why didn't the Air Force send some of their fighters out there? Why didn't they come there? We were being attacked for an hour and all, and the Prince of Wales was also attacked after that and sunk there. We were still in the water. That was several hours after there, and it was only just before I got picked up on this by one of the boats off one of the destroyers, which had closed in on permission from the Japanese there, that I, well, just before we were picked up, I don't know how long, but there one or two Royal Air Force little fighters swung over, come streaming across the water. But the Japanese had been gone then at least half an hour or an hour. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the Japanese must have thought about it, but they must have thought they got a load of Charlies here. It didn't seem as though we belonged to the same forces, the Air Force, the Navy, and that. There was no cooperation. I don't think so, anyway. And neither do any more of my surviving shipmates, anyway. You ask them. There, they came streaming over, one or two, not many, and they just disappeared because the Japs had already gone, been gone quite a bit.
But just before you sailed for East Coast, were you told anything about the air cover?
No, we were never even told in any way that we used to expect an air cover. Once or twice, like when I'd been out on the Repulse and we'd been round the UK, we've had anti-submarine patrol by the Air Force. They've come out, but we've never had any fighter protections or anything like that. But you see, on the Illustrious that I was on, there, then we used to send our own fighters up. If they'd have only had an aircraft carrier, or even what we used to call in the Navy, the merchantmen that was converted into a small carrier, we used to call them banana boats, with a few fighters on, there, that would have helped. But the one plane that we had, that was only just for spotting, and that was only for spotting for the big guns, to say where the shells was firing, falling, whether to go to the left or to the right.
So at that time, did you know that you were actually sailing to East Coast without any air cover?
Yes.
You knew.
We knew when we got to Singapore that we wasn't. Once we left Singapore, we knew that we had no air cover, because they should have been round us all the time. And we knew we wasn't all that many miles from the Malayan coast there. Well, land-based aircraft. We were just sitting ducks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Penta, what was your impressions of the Japanese air forces at that time?
The Japanese Air Force, Japanese force, they were very courageous. They pressed on their attacks like they should do. They were well organised. Perhaps their planes weren't as good as ours, but a lot of the Japanese planes was British made there, and so were their torpedoes. They were firing their own stuff back at us. Big business.
But then before you actually encounter the Japanese Air Force, did you have any ideas about what the Japanese Air Force was like and their ability?
No, the only time we did see the Japanese Air Force was that time when they flew over Singapore while we was in Singapore Harbour that night, and I saw them go up over the top. We was under the impression that they were no good. We had been impressed by that as they were just to be taken for granted there, but they weren't. No. And they didn't mind dying. And it's like during the second part of the war, when we used to get the kamikazes and we was in the Pacific off Okinawa and all like that, they used to dive at us with one intention, a blooming great big bomb or a great big shell fastened underneath it, and drive straight into the ship. And if you didn't explode them, they exploded you. But they never turned off. Like, they just kept going. For one thing, as far as I could understand, the Japanese, they'd do anything for the emperor. And furthermore, they never used to send them out with enough petrol on board on their planes to get back again. They had to ditch in the sea anyway. But as good as they were dead anyway when they left, when they volunteered for this sort of thing, they were as good as dead when they flew off.
But then, at that time, did you, hear anything about the Japanese ability in flying an aircraft?
Well, as far as we've been told, you see, the Japanese was very friendly with us until the Germans, we was having a rough time with the Germans, and the Japanese then jumped on our backs. And that's why I say, and that's why I never do, buy anything Japanese there. Because a lot of people today, they think, I was talking to two chaps and they said, I was talking to one chap, a mate of mine, he said, what do you think about my car? He said, a nice one, a beauty. I said, what is it? Oh, Japanese. I said, I wouldn't have that as a gift. He said, well, why not? He said, it's a good car. I said, it may be. But I said, have you ever thought about the Japanese, how they jumped on our back during the war when they thought we were down? He said, well, two chaps said, well, he said, we can't help that. That was civilians in this country. And that made me feel a bit mad. I know I've been told and I've told people about that sort of thing, well, you can't carry it on forever. Yeah. But the only reason now is why they're friendly with us. But if it was the other way around, they wouldn't be. The Japanese now, they've taken over the motorcycle trade. They're taking over the car. They're going to build Japanese cars in this country. It may be giving employment there, but it's a wrong thing to do in my mind. And I would like to say on behalf of the survivors of the repulse and that all those hundreds of men that lost their life, there we honestly think it's the wrong thing to do. They shouldn't be out anymore. I mean, they punished us enough.
So, what impact do you think this event had on you personally?
What? Repeat.
The sinking of the ship.
Yes.
What impact do you think it had on you?
Well, it didn't. It didn't make any difference. Once I got back home, I was still. I wasn't at all frightened anyway. I never used to get really frightened or anything, not during any of the attacks. And believe me, I've been through quite a few attacks. Air attacks anyway. We've been on the Illustrious afterwards. There, it never really worried me, but I used to look after myself. if I say anything coming diving down, I used to always, you know, push myself up against the bulkhead until it had disappeared. You've got to do that sort of thing. You just don't stand there and look at them. Mm-hmm. It back if you can.
But then you said when you sailed back to England, you...
Well, when I sailed back to England as a survivor, I did suffer a bit from nerves there. Not that I was frightened there, but it made me a bit... I kept feeling as though I wanted to jump over the side sometimes there, but it gradually wore off.
Do you think it has anything to do with this experience of the sinking?
Oh,
the
I do, and I'm still, to a certain degree, I'm still suffering from it, because I always have to keep taking anti-acid tablets. Well, since that day, like when I got all that oil fuel down there, I never had really a settled stomach there. I used to tell the doctors, but they didn't used to bother particularly. They used to say it'll go, but it never has. I still have to take me anti-acid tablets once or twice a day. Otherwise, all right. Made a bit of difference. I mean, I went from 9 stone, I was 11 stone 2 when I joined up. And funny thing too, I'm only 11 stone 6 now. When after the report, I went down to 9 stone 2. I was a bag of bones then, but I gradually picked it up again.
So can you tell me a little bit more about joining the Illustrious and your Pacific mission?
Well, I joined the Illustrious after having 9 months, after coming off the report. I was at the Brightlingsea motor torpedo base and that. And I used to go out on gun trials with them and all that sort of thing in the channel. And, I used to have a group of twin Lewis guns, which we used to mount every night when the Jerry came over. We used to jump on a bike, I did, there. And my job, one of my jobs too was, there was go and fetch any German aircraft, airmen down that had come down during the night on the coming back from London, or else man the twin Lewis guns up on the top, and such things as sometimes I used to have to do duty master at arms and all those sort of things. After that, I went to the Illustrious in OA3, which meant GPO rank then. There, and I worked very hard there, and for some unknown reason, after I'd been on about 9 or 10 months, although I was the only direct entry on board, I was chosen to go through for the Chief OA, who was going back, Jim Farley, which was sent back to England for a commission, but failed with his eyesight. And I was made temporary acting chief OA of the Illustrious, and I was on the Illustrious till she paid off near the end of the Japanese campaign there, and then I went and I came out of the Navy after 13 and a half years, and I was backdated from the date I was made temporary acting chief OA. And I was just chief OA 8 years out of my 5.5 years in the Navy, which was quite very good. Mm-hmm.
Mm. And what about your mission to the Pacific and joined up
with the American
fleet?
Yes, we went up into the Pacific. We went right round the Cape again, across to Australia, called in at Fremantle. Straight up the Pacific, then up the Christmas Islands and all those islands, up towards Okinawa. There, joined up with the Americans. Didn't exactly join up, but we were stopping the kamikazes between the Okinawa and Formosa. Our job was stopping the kamikazes, which we did. And that's what we did the 90-odd days at sea.
Did you experience any attack?
Oh, it was sometimes attacked two or three times a day. There. Though sometimes our aircraft would break it up before they could get through to the ship. Sometimes they'd get so many get through there, and then we'd have to shoot them down, which we did. We had more knowledge of and better equipment then than what we had then. We had gyroscopic sights and all like that on the guns and different things anyway. Better trained crews.
Why did you say better trained crews? What about
every time we was attacked there and we knocked one or two down, that was the best training the crews could ever have. There, firing at a sleeve, which is being dragged behind an aircraft, and you don't have to hit the drone neither, isn't a lot of good. But you get an aircraft which is wheeling and diving at you there, and the lads got the know-how, and that's how it went on. But the lads hadn't got much of the idea. When we were doing practice shoots on the way out, it's all right them saying as by the book, but things don't always work out by the book.
Then what about the shooting accuracy of repulse, if you compare that with the illustrious?
Oh, no.
The
Prince of Wales, like the illustrious, was more to it and on the job than I thought either of those two. I didn't see a lot of the Prince of Wales, so I can't say.
But repulse?
Repulse. Well, really speaking, there we had so much overhanging, like there was positions and avenues in which the aircraft could come in without even being touched.
So would you say that had nothing to do with the accuracy of the gunners or...?
Oh, there's nothing wrong with the gunners. It's just that they didn't have the equipment like they had on the illustrious. You see, we had gyroscopic sights that used to, a ship, it's rolling and pitching. And even on a quiet day when the sea is fairly calm, you see it's zigzagging all over the place, so consequently you get a little sway and all that has to be taken out. It's not like putting a gun mounting on the floor here, on a fixed floor and flying in something. You can't do that with an aircraft, I mean with a ship, because it's a moving platform all the time.
So when did you leave the Navy?
In 1952, in July 1952, they kept coming and asking me to sign on, and in the finish I told them straight, I said I've got no further interest in the Navy. And I was a bit disgusted for the fact that they hadn't done anything about given us any more opening and chances for promotion. By that time, I joined fairly late in life. There, I was now just over the age limit there, so it meant that although I'd had a pretty good time and a fair amount of experience there, I was no longer considered for promotion.
Because of your age?
Because of my age. And another thing too, because I was not a boy, went through the boy artificer school there, which says, but I did get the others on my own merit, with the aid of the ordnance officer, Harry Pryor.
So when did you marry?
Hmm?
When did you get married?
Oh, well, you see, yes, I got married after the war. Yes. I didn't have time during the war. I never even had a girlfriend there. I didn't seem to be able to get... I spent all my time, practically all my time abroad. For the first 18 months of the war, when I was on the repulse, I'd only seen about two women, because we was operating from Scapa Flow up around the Arctic Circle before we went into the Pacific when the Japs sunk us. There we was on the Arctic patrol up and down the Norwegian coast, chasing the big ones back into Germany, and never had any time. They only got barely very little leave. There, after that incident on the repulse, all I got was 10 days leave there, and then back again.
They didn't even give
me chance really for my hands to get any better. they was all sore through being burnt.
Being burnt?
Well, they were slightly burnt with the heat of the guns, you see, trying to clear the guns there, because everything was red hot then.
Yes, Mr. Jeffrey, do you have anything to add in before we end this interview?
No, there's only one more thing. When we mustered in Singapore, if I remember, an officer, he was a commissioned gunner, and he called me out, and I forget his name anyway, and said that I was going to be recommended for an award, but I never heard any more about it, so I just left it at that.
Was he also on the repulse?
You see, the trouble is, if you're on, the trouble is, it doesn't matter what you do, when, but if you're on the losing side, then of course, that washes all that sort of thing out, I guess. Leave it at that.
Right, thank you very much, Mr. Jeffrey.
Right.